Greetings, citizens of Earth. You are barking a happy tune with my pal Smurf of Smurf and the Magic Tones on 5280 Geek.
Live from the Figgis Studios, it is Weekend Geek Update. Smurf here, ready to just tell you what is not going on in the world, because let's face it, when you see snow in June, you really gotta wonder, is Vigo coming? Is cats and dogs living together? Real Wrath of God type stuff? Come on, man! What is going on out there? We are sponsored by Suzy Q's Wonderful Jewelry. She has the skills that will blow you away with pieces that are unique and something that you're not going to find in any store anywhere on this planet. Click on the link. See what she's got up. She's put some new bracelets and everything else. We will have Suzy on as soon as everything kind of, you know, gets to normal when we're not facing a blizzard in June here in Colorado. And so we'll get her on so she can go into further details of her exquisite skills. But in the meantime, admire her work, pick some work up for yourself for that one special someone. There you go, because the one that cares buys Suzy Q's or something like that. Anyway, So speaking of strange weather and how it relates. So this weekend, there was this signing, and I had no idea this was going on. So Brett Leader One contacts us in the morning saying that Clayton Crane, who you may or may not know as an artist, he has done a lot of stuff. And of course, his big claim is he did the artwork for Miles Morales' first appearance in Ultimate Fallout number 4, I believe, if my mind is working correctly. So Ultimate Fallout 4, we see Miles Morales come in as the Ultimate Spider-Man after Peter Parker goes kaput. He's done a lot of other stuff, some amazing covers. Ghost Rider, of course, Wolverine number 1 most recently. He does have a variant cover coming out for Joker 80, which will be soon, I believe. I don't know. We'll get to that because that's the DC news, and DC's got its own riled up bag of monkeys going on right now, so we'll get to that momentarily. At any rate, Clayton Crane, incredible artist, some amazing work. I picked up a couple of things from him, a Ghost Rider poster, amazing Spider-Man poster, or print, in addition to a signed Wolverine number 1. The man is just hilarious. He's very genuine, but he decided to take it upon himself to do this tour across the country. He's driving. He started in the Springs on Saturday and worked his way down to Westminster by Saturday afternoon to do the signing. So he's hitting all these different stores across the country to raise funds, to get people back out, to help stores. And it was kind of a fun little thing. So I get there, we get there around 1 o'clock, and there's already a line down the mall of where J&J Comics is situated. It's in a little outdoor mall, and it's cool. Tornado 2 back in the day is in that shopping center. In the early 90s, if you're a Colorado native, you might or may not know where that is. At any rate, we get there, lines both directions, meet up with Brett Leader 1, Smitty, get to see a couple of old friends that I haven't seen in ages with Brad and Randy, and of course, you know, the usual smattering of people that I normally just see at cons. Ray was there, of course, and, you know, it was fun. So we're hanging out. And the line, I mean, what Clayton did, Clayton took time with every single person that came through there. He took pictures, he did signings, he did sketches. I mean, the man was on point. He took time with every single fan, and I have to applaud that. I mean, there was no, you know, minimum, there was no, you know, outrageous fee. It was just simple. Buy the print, I'll sign it. You know, and the print is a high quality one. Holy crap. Glossy, beautiful, shiny, and he's even signing it in multicolored ink, and it was just a very good experience. And the print itself is $15. Well worth the price. The sketches, of course, is, you know, depending upon what you're getting and who and all of that. But he took time and he made the statement when he got there, he will get through everybody in this line. He's not leaving until everybody's taken care of. And it kind of reminded me of the old school days when, you know, people would show up and, you know, the artist made sure that nobody left empty-handed if they were there to see them. So it was kind of, it was cool. So while we're waiting, it was probably, I think, early on into it, all of a sudden, the sky, like, opens up, hellfire, damnation, we get, like, hurricane-force winds out of nowhere, rain that instantly turns to hail. So, Brett Leader 1 and I are sitting there, and we're over the, you know, we're under the overhang, and we're like, ah, we'll be safe. Nah, not even close. That served as like a wind tunnel for what came our way, because it was disastrous. The hail was like, ow, 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 ow. Okay, gotta get out of this. It cleared out that entire line. Everybody, like, ran into the bar that's right there, the comic shop. We ducked into Subway. It was disastrous, and it was just, like, right out of nowhere. So there are other places, like Totally 80s Toy Shop, which is over off of Broadway, had this entire billboard post sign. The whole thing fell right on top of their building and just crushed the entire building. Thankfully, no one was injured, and I haven't heard any further news as far as what's going on with Totally 80s Toy Store yet. But hopefully Deb and all of them are going to be reopening. I don't know what you do when a billboard completely crushes your building. I mean, it's one thing to get your door broken or glass messed up, but the building was crushed. I mean, that's something you don't normally see. Anyway, we did have a good time. We were the last ones there, of course. Wanted to make sure everybody got through. We helped, you know, manage the line a little bit, hung out, entertained, talked to people. It was a good time. Like I said, I missed that aspect of it. It was fun and way more enjoyable than I thought it was going to be. I honestly thought we were just going to be there and gone. That we wouldn't be, you know, there for as long as we were, but wow, the day just blew by. I mean, even Todd was there, who we've known for a while, and he had his whole bag full of books, and everything got signed. He Clayton did not turn anyone away. So huge respect, huge props to the man. Thanks to J&J Comics for bringing him out. And yeah, I can't promote those guys well enough. Spectacular turnout. What else have we got going? So, this week has been strange. Still on board with Holy Moly. And I can't... I laughed so hard during that show that... Worth it. It's how you need to spend your Thursday. Wednesday, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I feel bad for the show. It's just too little, too late. It's the end. So we'll see what more happens. This week's Shakedown, however, explosions, loud music, dun, 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 dun. This week's Shakedown, the Space Force has definitely come at the right time with the best distraction that I can kind of think for right now. There is an interesting story that came out of this, that Space Force copyrighted the name before the government, so they technically own it. With that, it just kind of adds a little bit more feather to the cap to the creator, who of course is Steve Carell. I mean, who doesn't love this man? Steve is just a great guy, and as I'm watching the show, all I can see is Gru from Despicable Me, and it's just like, okay, this is if Gru was a general. The show is... The breakdown is not original by any means. Every character is extreme and completely over the top. Some are very understated to to the point of being over the top. It's like every character is just like one bad taco away from snapping. The stress level that everybody is dealing with, and the topics so far have been very interesting. They've been very focused on Space Force, the ludicrous of all of it, boots on the moon. Of course, Steve Carell steamheading the whole new initiative created by the branch, the presidency, all of that nonsense. And they go from Washington to Colorado. So evidently some old NORAD base is converted into the center for Space Force. And it's kind of, I'm like, well, I guess if you were going to go anywhere, Colorado, I guess, makes sense. And don't get me wrong, there's some very genuine moments, and Steve Carell did help write a lot of the episodes. He's a creator in the whole scope of it. And it's very, in some points, it's very genuine, and it shows a very humanistic side of just being a person on the planet, helping those around you. It's a very good, solid message. While on the other side, it just shows how ludicrous and over the top some things get, just blown up out of proportion, especially with Space Force. And there's even this one episode with a monkey. I'm not going to spoil it for you. That just was absolutely, he's a monkey, and it's entertaining. I honestly think, and the celebrity lineup is through the roof. Fred Willard is in it. I do believe that this is his final appearance before he passed away. The beginning episode is dedicated to Fred Willard's memory and him passing. So I don't know if he made it all the way through. I haven't finished the show. I'm like an episode or two away. The weekend was full, as I mentioned, with the strange weather and the cats and dogs falling from the sky. But the overall impression that I get is it's funny, it's dry, and it's very droll. And Steve Carell delivers on a level that you expect. Nobody misses the mark. And the best character, in my opinion, and out of all of this, of course, is Malkovich. John Malkovich is by far the most engaging and entertaining character in all of this. And there's some really good moments between Steve and John that are just golden, and some of them I had to actually replay just to see, because I want to know how they kept a straight face in some of these scenes, because the two of them working together, and Malkovich is a genius, let's face it. Malkovich cannot be touched. He's absolutely brilliant, and I did love him in the New Pope series, and his whole take on Catholicism and being the Pope, and just, that show is, I'll go into that show one day after I understand it, because there are just things that I sit there and I just scratch my head about the new Pope that I still don't understand. Anyway, but star-studded cast, everybody, Patrick Roburn is in there, I can't think of, what's his putty, Lemony Snicket, can't think of his name at the moment. And, of course, Lisa Kudrow, who's Carell's wife. And there's something obviously goes totally wrong in their lives as they move from D.C. to Colorado, as it's a year later from the opening shot. And we go from Lisa sleeping in the same bed as Steve to being in prison. It's it's awesome. It really, just how drastic things go. And, like I said, everything just like under the surface just is ready to just explode, because it's just that tense, and I think they relayed it very well. And like I said, it's very dry in some spots, but it's very droll, and it's very well constructed. How they put all of this together, even the special effects, the interactions with the Chinese, it is by far worth the watch. You can binge it on Netflix right now, so by all means, go over there, give it a once. I think it's pretty short season. I think it's like around 8 or 10 episodes. Average runtime, 30 minutes. Piece of cake. It is definitely something that you want to have on in the background, but you may need to pay a little bit of attention the first go through so you can kind of, because the interactions and watching Malkovich play, because his expressions and all that that he does are just so, so classic. So, definitely worth the watch. Definitely worth the time. Hopefully we'll see this return. I don't know if Carell had more in store or in mind when he built this. And if Netflix even decides to bring it back, since Netflix is just crazy that way, and, you know, they do what they do. And that is my shakedown for this week's show, Space Force. Boots on the Moon. Dun, dun, dun. I gotta find music. I really do. Speaking of Netflix, the Lucifer series is yet to give us a date or premiere or all of that, but before the next season comes out, we have season six, seven? They've already extended it for another season. Evidently, there were some kind of complications with the contract and everything, so now that everything is worked out from the previous studio to the new studio, Netflix taking over, we will have another season after this one for Lucifer. Which I'm okay with. There are some great opportunities, I think, that even with the comic they never explored, and Tom Ellis does an incredible job playing Lucifer. And that was kind of the hang-up. His contract and trying to make sure everybody was happy. He was the big problem, and they basically just kind of tied him up with the previous studio. So now that that's fine and sorted out, everybody's happy, we are going to get another season of Lucifer after this one. And cool. I am absolutely fine with that. Of course, I may change my mind after we see what the new premiere and the new season is like, if that ever really happens. So, anyway, one of those little side stories that I saw going on, and yeah, we'll continue on. In movie news, Godzilla vs. King Kong, the director is hinting that the next film is going to have kind of like a non-stop action, kind of like Kaiju style, and it's basically going to be total monster destruction, which I'm excited to see. I mean, let's face it, the first Godzilla film, we never really saw the monsters, and that was kind of the director's take on it. He wanted to keep it ambiguous and just kind of leave you building the scenes in your mind and what's going on, and just kind of a very, I can't think of the film all of a sudden, where you don't know what's going on. You know something is going on, and you're just kind of walking into moments, experiences. So it's fine. It was good for that. And then, of course, the last film, not bad, but I definitely felt that there still could have been more monster interactions. More fights. Wanted to see something. But what we got was fine. It was better than the first one. And then, of course, there's Kong Skull Island, which is absolutely spectacular. And I really enjoy that experience a lot more than I thought I was going to. And I think it actually resonated a lot better with the fans than anyone really also thought it was going to. It was heavy on the action, and it was brutal. And you kind of expected that based on you're at Skull Island. There really is no civilization. There's no major human element. You're all of nature. It kind of reminded me of Congo, where every time they used some technology, nature came back and just smacked them in the face. And that's kind of what Skull Island was in my mind, where you have Samuel L. Jackson, who does Samuel L. Jackson, and as a military leader, perfect fit. But every time that they just tried to push back, nature came right back at them. And even though they shouldn't have been messing with the big monkey, we kicked their ass. But the fighting the island itself and everything else that goes on, and that's what I really liked about Skull Island. They didn't leave anything unexplored. You know the island is deadly. Okay, why is it deadly? So you get, you know, some of the natives that are still there. You get all of the natural hazards in addition to more monsters. It's not just Kong on Skull Island, and I like that a lot. So hopefully we will see an expanse on that as we get into Godzilla vs. Kong. Now, there haven't been any specific plot details released. Everything is being kept very hush-hush, and I can understand. But they have confirmed that Millie Bobby Brown and Kyle Chandler will be returning in their roles that they had in the last Godzilla film, King of Monsters. So we do get kind of them transitioning into the next film. How we get there or why everything is going on, I'm sure as more information leaks out, we'll fear the worst for the world. I have seen a little bit some of the behind-the-scenes designs, thanks to a good friend who's part of the art team, and I've been privy to a couple of images, and no spoilers, can't talk about it, but they look spectacular. I cannot wait to see it on the big screen. It'll be amazing, trust me. And with this set for, I think what they're saying is November 20th is last I heard. Now, this may or may not change. It was already pushed back from its original date in March, but everything is suggesting that they may push back again into 2021, somewhere in May. That all depends on theaters and the COVID and everything else that's going on. So we'll keep an eagle eye on it, but I have absolute faith that this will be the best Godzilla film of the new series. And I really think hopefully some of the monsters, there are other monsters and other creatures on Skull Island that erupt or come out, not just Kong, but something else. I'm really, really excited to see what comes out. Also, if you didn't see it on the page, please flip over to our Facebook page and watch the Bill and Ted's Getting Over Ourselves in 40 or Flat Broken 40 or Peaked at High School. I forget what they're calling it. No, it's Bill and Ted Face the Music. The new trailer has hit. I honestly didn't think we would see a trailer until next year with everything going on and delays and the ambiguity of the show or the movie. Was it being made? Is it not being made? And it is. It's done, I guess. Can I say that it's really weird seeing Keanu Reeves back in this role after seeing him do some amazing stuff with Matrix, with John Wick, even the one film I just watched it on Netflix with everybody, and I can't remember the name of it. He's like the love interest with the comedian, and it was absolutely hilarious. Keanu Reeves at his best. Oh, it was Always Be My Maybe. That's it. Finally, brain kicks in. So, he really plays an exaggerated sense of himself in this film, and it is, he really steals this entire film, in my opinion. Ali Wong is one of the writers. I've seen her do some stand-ups. Anytime I see her in stand-up, of course, she's pregnant. She makes a joke about that. But that being said, Ali Wong is in it. She's also the writer of it. But Keanu Reeves just really steals the film on this one. Now, to see him back in Bill and Ted and reprising this role, it just seems weird. He's not as, I don't know, I guess in Bill and Ted the first time he seemed just kind of awkward and gangly and all of that. Now it just, I don't know, the trailer seems like he's more awkward doing this, and he's really gotten into the action hero roles and all of his characters that have come before this or come after this, however you want to look at his timeline wise. But the trailer is awesome, and them trying to, you know, sell the fact that they're in their 40s and they haven't done what they were supposed to do, or they haven't achieved the stellar, be excellent to each other level that they should have. It looks great. It really does. So go over, check out the trailer. Worth watching on our Facebook page. Totally worth it. In television news, it has been a weird last few days. Last month. Actually, this whole year, let's face it. This whole year has been off the rails. But with the issues of everyone going on and the heightened sense of be gentle, be kind, be understanding, we've had another explosion of social media, and this one is hitting the Flash set as Hartley Sawyer is fired over offensive tweets that he made, many of them back in starting in 2012, and they stretch into 2014. Due to the nature of these tweets and the statements that were made by Hartley, he has been released and fired from The Flash. The CW making the stance of they will not tolerate any, will not be returning for his statements, and basically, the CW stance is we're not going to tolerate it. Everybody is, no one should be attacked on social media. They do not tolerate any derogatory remarks that target race, ethnicity, national origin, gender, sexual orientation, and rightfully so. The statements that he made, that Hartley made in the past, he's basically a public figure. He depends on the fans, and given the nature of all of the CW shows, The Flash, all of them, they embrace all sexual orientations, all unique characteristics that make us who we are. And to say anything derogatory about any of that is foolhardy. Now, Hartley did apologize back in the day, and that is not an excuse. He should never have done it in the first place. But due to the fallout and due to the current climate, he has been let go. So what does this mean for The Flash? If you're unaware of the character that Hartley plays, he does play Ralph Dibny, the elongated man. Now, when this character first showed up, I remember writing, I didn't like this character. I thought it was a bad choice, and I didn't care for him. Ralph has never been one of my favorite characters out of the Justice League. He was always, you know, kind of, he's supposed to be this great detective, but of course he's no Batman, but Batman can't be everywhere, so there has to be other great detectives out there. Thank God we didn't get, you know, Detective Chimp. But through the seasons, Hartley actually has grown on me as the elongated man. I have enjoyed the stories. And then, of course, we had Sue finally introduced this season, the shortened season, with, of course, Sue later becoming Ralph's wife and kind of a, I mean, she is like one of the mentors and one of the, you can almost say she's like one of the founding members of the older Justice League, because she is a fan favorite. She, by far, I don't want to give anything away as far as the comic books or all of that, but when she met her end, it was pretty bad. But that said, Ralph has grown on me. I have appreciated the elongated man's stories in The Flash a lot more than I thought, because I didn't really like Ralph. I didn't like how they brought him in. I thought he was just kind of eh. But through the course of the story, through the seasons, we see him grow and evolve as not only a superhero, but as a human, as a person who realizes that there are better choices, there are better ways, and developing a sense of honor and pride about how he conducts himself amongst the world and hope in civilization. I honestly do not think they should write out Ralph. I think if they, because I think there's there's a reason for the character. There's valid reasons to keep the character. There is a story there. There is a reason to keep Ralph around. Not only for the comic relief, of course, because he's the elongated man. He can do all of the funny stretching and, you know, he's rubber, so he can move his face into whatever configuration he wants and all of that. And maybe that's how we'll get to that point. His face gets stuck in another mold. I don't know. I'm not sure how they would approach that. Or if they will. I mean, they kind of, for one reason or another, wrote Wally out. They brought him in just to write him out. Because, you know, we can't have too many speedsters on a show about speedsters. Yeah, that just doesn't make sense. That's just crazy. So, that's actually Red calling. We'll get back to her. The whole breakdown of losing Ralph is kind of a blow, because I don't know what character you would even replace him with at this point. There are a lot of, I mean, maybe we would see Wally come back. Can the Flash function as just the Flash? Do we need to have, you know, the support team and all of that? And I talked about this last week of, with HBO getting to the point of, you know, maybe taking on more DC roles, are we starting to see the, you know, the twilight for the CW shows as DC gets bigger budgets, bigger venues, and all of that? It's hard to say. Will we see an elongated man return? I don't know. Maybe. It's really hard to say at this point since this all just erupted. But he, yeah, don't expect to see him back anytime soon. And I wouldn't be surprised if they just kind of, he's not coming back. Him and Sue, you know, sailed off into the sunset after everything that went on. And that was that. Really difficult to say how they want to or are going to play this, but I wouldn't be surprised if they just kind of, you know, like how they did with Wally. Oh, he's, you know, in the Tibetan mountains working on his, you know, meditation skills. Yeah, it still doesn't work for me. I mean, if I'm really being honest, I would love to see Wally come back. I think the small little teaser that we got of him back this season, and I did love him when he was on Legends. That was also extremely short-lived, so I don't know if it's just they don't know how to write for Wally, if the actor just is not interested in a full-time role. Who knows? I mean, there's always complications in regards to that, but I think if there was a solid story, that the actor would totally be on board to continuing to portray Wally West. I mean, he keeps coming back. I wouldn't mind seeing him as the Flash, but now that the Speed Force is gone, doesn't have his powers, maybe he comes back and Barry shows him how to tap into the new Speed Force that he creates. Who knows? But I would be interested in maybe it is time to change the guard up a little bit. Maybe even bring one of the villains back. With everything that's gone on with the resetting of DC's universe and all of that after Crisis, I actually would be kind of entertained to see Pied Piper come back as a show regular and be part of Team Flash. In the comics, Pied Piper actually is a solid friend to Wally, but I guess him and Barry never got along, but different times, different flashes, and I would love to see Pied Piper come back, and especially with the storyline that we saw this season with him, maybe there's an opportunity to see a new exploration of Pied Piper and making him a show regular. That would be kind of fun. A new villain slash hero, maybe. That'd be kind of fun. Also in CW news, this just kind of broke. According to The Direct, they are talking about season 2 of Batwoman and that Kate Kane is going to be killed off. And this will set the stage for a new character, Ryan Wilder, to take up the mantle of Batwoman. This just came out, and this may or may not have any substance, but it really did catch my eye because I know Batwoman was, is a huge success in my mind, and I don't know if it's just because of the perfect mixture of everything, if it's Ruby Rose, however you want to break it down, but the whole premise with Batwoman has been great. Now, according to the direct, everything is set for season 2, and now that they've mixed it up and they know how they're going to proceed, they're saying that Ruby Rose as Batwoman will be killed off, and a character from, or a person from Rivendale? Yeah, Riverdale's Vanessa Morgan is going to be casted as Batwoman, and that we get Scarecrow in season 2. And of course, Vanessa Morgan's character, Raren Wilder, loses her mother to the Scarecrow or something like that, and she then becomes Batwoman after Ruby's killed off. I think having some of Batman's rogues gallery showing up is beautiful. I was not expecting Hush, but it was so well done. Loved it. Give me Scarecrow, give me Freeze, give me, I mean, Penguin I can do without, but even Zaz would be, that would be a fun little back and forth. But with Ruby gone, I'm curious what's going to happen with her sister. Is this going to be a new dynamic? I don't know, and especially now we won't ever get to see the exploration with Kate and her dad, and maybe he comes to terms at the end, finds out that she was Batwoman. Maybe they never reveal it. Who knows? But that's kind of what's circling around the rumor mill right now. Let me know what your thoughts are. Who would you like to see take up the mantle of Batwoman? What villains would you like to see on Batwoman? And do we get rid of the Elongated Man? Has he stretched himself too thin? And is this a good time for him to, you know, be shot off into the office pool? Let me know. Give me your thoughts. Also, in streaming news, dun-dun-dun, Stranger Things Season 4 is... they're already kind of poking at what is going to happen. What are we going to see? Who are we going to see? And it's of no surprise that David Harbour is back. They are mad at work for Season 4. And the basic breakdown is that they are looking for a release date around May or June 2021. So they are probably a little behind in their filming, but there is also the rumor of them potentially launching on Christmas Day of this year or on New Year's Day right after. So it's curious of... what happens, what's going to go on. I'm excited just to see how, and I'm sure it's simple as, you know, it's a doorway, it goes both ways, Harbour ends up in Russia, and the whole premise of, you know, they're not home anymore, and, you know, we're not in Hawkins anymore. It really, really looks like they're going to go out on a strong note, because this is it. From what I have heard, all indications say that season 4 is done. It's the end of the story, and we'll see. So perhaps, but that's all kind of what's going on. But we may see, you know, the Upside Down finally break through into our dimension, maybe. Especially when you see the new season 4 logo with like vines around it. So. We shall see, and excuse me. That's kind of all I got on that one. But I wanted to give you an update, at least that Stranger Things has not been completely forgotten. Not that it ever really could, but 4 seasons seems so short to me. It really does. It seems like we could go so much deeper into this world, and we still don't even know the other characters that have come before 11. So maybe we'll see more with other characters. Maybe this is just the end of these guys' story arcs as we, you know, move into, you know, closer into our time. I mean, 80s is great. 90s is a bit of a train wreck, but maybe we'll see 90s. God, that would be great. Season 5 is a whole new batch of actors and the Upside Down and 90s swag. Great. I got my Puma shoes from that 90s somewhere. Somewhere, I guess. So in TV, other TV news, not kind of TV. Well, sort of. So everybody knows that my love for Expedition Unknown and Josh Gates, always watching that show. He has done some episodes on treasure hunting and The Secret, which he did a breaking story on last year. Somebody actually figured out where one of the special, this guy basically made a treasure map with art and a riddle for each location, and there's like 12 different paintings, and they've only found like 3 or 4 of the treasures. So in that main vein, and Josh Gates actually has covered this story, but an art dealer and author, Forrest Fenn, had buried this treasure over 10 years ago. And he had basically said that there it was somewhere in the Rocky Mountains. It was north of Santa Fe, New Mexico, and basically many clues of Fenn's writing, including a 25-line poem published in 2010 autobiography, The Thrill of the Chase, gave different clues as far as where it was. But it's finally been found. Evidently, it's been sitting there, and Fenn congratulated the people that participated. But it was the body count actually has been kind of high on this. People went nuts trying to find this treasure when Fenn first released it. And of course, it's $1 million in treasure, and I guess doubloons, or who knows what. I haven't seen a picture of what the actual treasure was, or if it's just like $1 million cash. But the I'm waiting actually for the episode on Expedition Unknown to show up, because I'm sure Josh would be all over this, because he did cover this in, it was either Destination Truth or Expedition Unknown. I don't remember which show, but it was one of his. But I mean, people have, like, through the years, had passed away. I mean, like in 2019 alone, there were a couple of people that they found had passed away in Montana. Two were rescued in Yellowstone or near it. They found a body in New Mexico. So, I mean, these people have gone to extremes to find it. Fenn said officially on his website that he's glad that everybody got out. He is glad that it's over, but kind of sad because the chase is over. So it's kind of a mixed bag for Fenn, who basically created this whole treasure hunt to encourage people to go out to explore nature. And evidently, where he buried the chest is where it was found. So nobody ever found it. No one ever tampered with it, which is interesting. So I don't know how the guy that found it figured it out. He has not actually come out and said how he figured it out yet, but I am sure we will hear more about it in the days to come, or he's basically probably waiting to let everybody know that, I found it. This is how I did it. And I'm sure Josh Gates probably like reached out as soon as this story broke. So interesting. Moving on to other weird news that I've seen that has popped up. Not only treasure hunting, which I still think I should probably start working on that. The Secret. Maybe a little too late. Who knows? Anyway, another story that caught my eye is Bruce Campbell is living on a jet plane in the middle of Oregon. He turned a Boeing 727 into a home. No, not that Bruce Campbell. Actually, it is another Bruce Campbell who, back in the day, turned a 727 into a home. I mean, I've heard of, you know, the tiny homes, or, you know, the flatbed homes or trailers, but never in a million years did I think someone would turn a Boeing 727 into a house. Evidently, this guy bought this land back in the day, and when in 1999 he bought for $100,000 a retired airplane. Normally they scrap these, they use them for parts, they'll break down the metal, they you know, reappropriate it. So he took advantage of it and ended up turning it into a home after he got it out to the middle of nowhere. Campbell, of course, is a very cool cat. After he remodeled it, he encourages people, if they're out hiking or in the area, to come by. If you're out roaming around in Portland, you're more than welcome to come spend the night, hang out. I'm sure that he'd be happy if you brought him some wine or something. Of course, he does request that you, you know, give him an email or something that you're at least planning on stopping by before just dropping in on him. Because I guess, you know, that's a thing. Some of the pictures of the plane interior as he's converted it have been kind of eye-opening. And I never really thought about turning a plane into a home. Of course, the wings have been sectioned off. They're you know, not the full wingspan, because it would just take up way too much space. But there's an aerial picture of the plane sitting in the park area, or the land that he purchased, and it just, it looks like a plane crash. It really looks like something landed here that probably shouldn't have, because the length of the plane is 153 feet. So it is long. So yeah, and I guess it equates to, according to this, 1,066 square feet is the interior. So I guess the flight deck, a lot of the parts he's, you know, sold out. I mean, he's kind of parted it. Chairs are gone, even like the cart for food. He does feel bad that he has let things go for, instead of keeping it nostalgic, or at least keeping some of the things it came with. So, I don't know. I think that's kind of cool myself. I'd like a plane for a house. I mean, of all the things that I've seen people turn into houses, you know what I've always wanted? I just don't want to live there. I've always wanted a lighthouse. I just don't want to be that close to the ocean every day. It would be great. So maybe some point I can buy enough land to build a lighthouse-style home. Then I'd totally be in. Yeah. But yeah, in Colorado, a lighthouse home would be kind of ridiculous. It'd be like the house from Woody Allen's Sleeper that just sits up in there in the mountains. It's that weird oblong egg thing. It's been on the market a couple of times, but I don't want to live in the mountains all the time. But if I could have a lighthouse in the center of the city, totally in. I don't want a tiny home. I need a regular size home, and this would be it. Anyway, there are pictures available online. You can probably look up Bruce Campbell's jetliner for the plans. Speaking of Bruce Campbell, the Bruce Campbell. There's been some rumors floating around as far as what's going on. A lot of the Evil Dead stars think that they can get Bruce Campbell out of retirement for a new season if it was the right brand of story. I know there's a lot of, I don't know, I don't want to say animosity, but you know, everybody involved with Ash versus Evil Dead back in 2015, it was on the Stars Network, and a lot of the creative team feel that if it was on Netflix or Hulu or Amazon, that they probably would have kept going and they would have had a better appeal to the fans instead of being limited to just Stars. And of course, this was the contract, and they you know, it's where they landed. I guess when they finally were able to get Ash versus Evil Dead on Netflix, they saw a huge uptick for all three seasons, and Dana DiLorenzo and Ray Santiago are convinced that they could get Bruce out of retirement. Of course, as soon as the series ended, Campbell said, "I'm done. I retire from the role." But of course, you never say never? Because now, according to what we see, there is a new Evil Dead that is kind of in the works. Campbell has confirmed that the Evil Dead 4th film is titled Evil Dead Now. And they want to kind of explore different people in the Evil Dead universe. They want to kind of expand on, you know, average people. They know that, of course, everybody loves Ash, and he does have a certain, you know, love in our heart, but they really would like to explore other characters in the universe. And they've proven that, you know, you don't need just Ash, especially with what they did on Ash versus Army of Darkness, or Ash versus Evil Dead. I always say Army of Darkness. Best film out of the series, but that's just my opinion. The Dana and all of them proved that they can do it. So the new film, Evil Dead Now, is looking to have a female role as far as the lead, and they haven't really done too much. But we're gonna, I'm guaranteeing, see more of this. But according to Bruce Campbell and Sam and everybody else, he is out. He's retired from playing Ash, and that is sad. That breaks my heart, especially since Ash vs. Evil Dead was so good. I really enjoyed the exploration, the further exploration of the character, because it was always left on, you know, weird terms, especially at the end of Army of Darkness. What happened? He goes all the way to the end of time and sees basically, you know, like Planet of the Apes style ending of, you know, you blew the whole damn thing up. So what happened? And then, of course, we do get an explanation in the series of how things transpired for him to get back, and it is even a plot point in the show, and I think season 3? Yes, end of season 3? I think it was. Anyway, it was a plot point in season 3, so we do get kind of a closure, and I think that was mainly what the fans are screaming for. But now, of course, we've seen what is potential, what is possible, and I'm all for it. But I don't think we will see it, which will be sad. Don't want to see the end of Ash, but we'll see, and we'll go from there. Yeah, they haven't announced who they're looking at either for Ash or the lead role. I apologize. In comic book news, this one, it comes as no surprise as DC cuts ties with Diamond Comic Distributors. They will no longer be distributing through Diamond. And this is kind of a bombshell, because the percentage that Diamond carries for DC is like 30%, roughly. So that is a good portion of Diamond business, like, lost now. And this all comes on the heels of COVID and everything. And DC basically has stated that they understand the decisions that Diamond made during COVID and distribution, and there are better opportunities out there. And for basically a long time now, Diamond has basically had a monopoly on the distribution, as we've seen other distributors come and go over the years. And we were talking about this actually at the signing with, you know, the ones that have come before and the struggles. There's an opportunity here. Whether or not it works, it remains to be seen. Marvel tried doing their own distribution back in the day, which I've talked about before, doing direct distribution, and it's a slippery slope, and there's a lot of problems. Now, DC has gone on to say, we recognize that many of you, this may seem like a monumentous decision. However, we can assure you that this is a change in DC's distribution plans has not been made lightly and follows a long period of thought and consideration. The change of direction is in line with DC's overall strategic vision, intended to improve the health of and strengthen the direct market, as well as grow the number of fans who read comics worldwide. I don't know if DC's really considering the fans in this, and they're just looking at something for their bottom line. They went on to say, in the near term, Diamond will only be fulfilling orders placed through June 1st Final Order Cutoff, or FOC, and will not solicit the sales of new DC titles further. To ensure the smooth transition for retailers, DC will suspend FOC for June 8th, making those books available to order on Final Order Cutoff on June 15th. So after 25 years, DC just pulls the plug. Is this good for comics? Is this good for DC? Is it good for fans? I mean, we know DC probably has some of the better merchandise out there. And I know a lot of people have reacted a lot more, I don't know, I don't want to say violently, but I mean, the reactions have been across the board. Mile High Comics basically blowing all of their DC stuff out. I don't think that was really the intended reaction from DC by shipping out of somewhere else. And I know Chuck Rosansky has probably an entirely different take on this, and he's entitled to it. But I don't know if DC say they thought through this long and hard, and I know Diamond has its own struggles and difficulty going on right now, and that's fine. Not surprised, but I think DC probably has had this on mind and in their head. So we'll see how this breaks down. If this breaks down, we'll probably see the cracks in the system quickly. But I mean, you've got plenty of opportunities for it to go so bad. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's no love lost between me and Diamond. I mean, back in my day when I still had to deal with them as a retailer, there were always challenges. There were opportunities. Marvel tried to do it. There were bigger opportunities and bigger challenges. I don't think when it comes to a specific formula, there's one that's better than the other. How do you facilitate the needs of comic book stores across the country cost effectively and still get everybody what they need? It's not as easy as you would think. And I don't know. I hope and wish DC all of the luck that they need to pull this off. But this could very well be the end of DC. We'll see. The company that will be carrying them is Lunar Distribution and UCS Comics Distribution. I'm sure it's probably going to kind of dice up the country as far as who's going to handle which half. Because back in the day, there was one that was based in, when Diamond wasn't the only game in town, Diamond was mostly East Coast, and then there was one that was primarily West Coast. They did a decent job, but Diamond just finagled their way into the hearts and minds of everybody. And like I said, cost effective when you're dealing with razor-thin margins of a comic book. Those pennies add up over time. So what this means for Diamond, we don't know. They've been reached out by multiple media outlets and have yet to comment. So they're probably waiting to see. They probably don't even have a statement yet at this point. They're probably sitting there scratching their head going, gosh, what do we do now? Moving on to video game news. This kind of cracked me up. Sega Game Gear Micro was announced. Tiny, tiny. I mean, this thing is small. It's molded after the 1990s Sega Game Gear, which I still have. Mine is actually stuffed in a box with all of, you know, the games that I had. I don't think it was that many, but it was still kind of fun. Skipped ahead because that's coming up next. The Micro is just this little tiny thing. I feel like I'm going to break the damn thing. It's no bigger than like your fingernail, man. This thing is small, but it's kind of cool. I mean, there's different colors, and they're each installed with four different games. And I guess each one runs about 45 $100. So, yeah, I don't know if I'm totally on board with this. There are about, when I say, four different colors. There's black, blue, yellow, and red. The games that are specific to each color, we can list on the page so you know what you're getting into. Yellow kind of looks like it's all Shining Force. You've got Shining Force, Shining Force 2, and Shining Force Final Conflict. A lot of these games, maybe Blue has got Sonic and Tails, but I mean, that's kind of what we ended up running into the problem with the original Game Gear. There weren't like a whole lot of great games for it. It was mostly just, you know, kind of brain-draining stuff to keep the kids quiet. I mean, Black, of course, has Outrun and Sonic the Hedgehog, so those two, you know, are like, you know, the big stays for the Game Gear, but I don't know. I think I would rather just download it if I wanted it on my phone and just leave it at that. Leave it at a app purchase and call it done. But sure. I mean, these things are palm size. I don't even know how you're going to be able to see a screen, let alone play a game like something like Sonic. That thing going to get you sick. Now, also speaking of Sega, the Genesis Mini has been released. Well, actually, hold on, back up. The Sega Game Gear Mini is going to be available October 6th to mark the 30th anniversary of the Game Gear. So we'll see how that's received. I'm not sure what the distribution is going to be for colors. I'm hoping that they would be even across the board, but I wouldn't count on it because not everyone is going to be all about, you know, the GG Shinobi or, you know, actually, I don't give a shit about Shining Force. I've never really cared for that game. I know. Shoot me. Now, Sega Genesis Mini is available at Amazon and other retailers for $50, which, all things considered, is a really good price. The Mini, of course, like I said, it's in the same vein as like Nintendo and Commodore 64 and Nintendo 2 Tiny Minis that has all the preloaded games and everything else on it. I mean, if you can't afford the stacks of cartridges and all that, then this would be a perfect fit. I mean, I know a lot of people out there have never even played some of these, has ever played Sega. I mean, I know a few millennials, you know, Sega came gone and was, you know, already in the shelves, the back shelves, by the time they came around. Xbox dominated, Nintendo dominated, even the Wii was, you know, more popular than Sega. So there are some fun games. Don't get me wrong. Sega did have some hits. I still think that they are better off as a game creator than a console. But and I actually caught flack for that, which was fine. I was okay with it. The games that they're saying that are the big hits that will be loaded onto the Sega Genesis Mini are Sonic the Hedgehog, of course, Contra Hardcore, Castlevania Bloodlines, Golden Axe, Echo the Dolphin, which, whatever. There's Thunder Force 3, Gunstar Heroes. The best one out of this that stands out to me, of course, is Earthworm Jim. This game was completely understated for its time. I love this. I love this better than Crash Bandicoot, and it has more of a soft spot for me in that vein. I even picked up some of the toy line from back in the day on this, and I think they even tried a shot at a cartoon. I don't think it was very successful, but the toy line was great, in my opinion, and you had a bunch of different Earthworm Jim suits, and they did different things, and it was a fun game. That alone is worth picking up the Sega Genesis Mini, in my opinion. Worth the hit. Absolutely. So if you're in the position, it is available on Amazon and other retailers across the board. GameStop, Best Buy, if it's open. I know they're taking like appointment only right now, and that just, I would call, go online. They do have the pickup. That's probably the best thing to do. If you could buy it online and do a drive-by pickup, that would probably be the best for it. But like I said, Earthworm Jim, that's worth the price for the
Sega Genesis Mini.
All right. Dun, dun, dun. And now, explosions, loud music, dun, dun, dun. I really got to figure that out. If you got a tune or if you're a band and you want your music to be a segue, that would be helpful. I should probably ask somebody. Maybe I can play a tune on a guitar. Maybe I'll do that later. Anyway, this week's restaurant said, help me survive the COVID. Dun, dun, dun. In my quest for drunken noodles, I did get introduced to this cafe by Tuan. And the odd thing is, it's in a location that I used to kind of almost call home. The location is 1350 South Colorado Boulevard, and it is in the Century 21 Plaza, which back in the day actually was a movie theater. It was the Century 21, and it had a balcony. I had seen a ton of movies there, and I think this is the last place that Titus and I saw Blade Runner. The final theatrical release and the extended director's cut. This is also later to become home to Ultimate Electronics, where I ended up working for, not this location, but overall 15 years in Ultimate. This was kind of a fun location. It was great. The only thing around it was a big empty field and a good times. So I can tell you the amount of big Bacon Daddy cheeseburgers that I ate during a shift. Of course, time moves on, and progress stops for no man as they bulldozed this eyesore of a building that was falling apart and leaked anytime that there was any precipitation at all whatsoever. Out of the wake of this came this amazing little strip mall. And in the far corner of it is this place that Tuan introduced me to called Thai Pot Cafe. Now, in my quest for the best Thai noodles, or spicy noodles, this has actually kind of come in as a favorite, and I do frequent here a lot. Not only do they have, you know, the spicy drunken noodles that I enjoy, but there are other Thai noodle dishes, curries, and stir fries that are on this menu that are absolutely delicious. The degrees of spiciness and flavor are very well balanced and come across in something that you will find truly enjoyable and palate pleasing in this cute little cafe. Of course, they are only doing takeout at the moment. They haven't done any dine-in. They only open, of course, starting now with the modified hours with COVID and everything, starting at 4 p.m. It was a great place for lunch, and as soon as things return back to normal, I can guarantee you I'm going to go back and actually be able to sit down and enjoy the noodles. Now, as I mentioned last week, the filler that the other restaurant chose with cabbage isn't the case here. The noodles and beef mix are very well balanced. There are other peppers and other things added to the noodles, but it is a generous proportion. They're very well mixed, and I enjoy them thoroughly. And I've tried their like Thai hot, and as much as it's not too spicy for me anyway. I know a lot of people have kind of like wish-wash back and forth on how spicy it really is and if it's too spicy, and it really just comes down to your palate. Sure. But overall, this is probably a very well-kept secret. I don't know a lot of people that know about Thai Pot Cafe. It should be more well-known, especially given the traffic that's right there along Colorado Boulevard. Absolute gem. So if you're looking to, you know, just kind of go down there, and the noodles aren't bad. They're really good. And without that, you know, noisy filler of cabbage, it is, there have been a couple times that I've had to like, okay, I need a to-go box. It's never been too spicy for me, but given your palate and what you can withstand as far as heat, you may want to consider working up to the Thai spicy. They do have a lot of different degrees, and they ask you up front. They don't just like hit you with it. And they are not the sweet, spicy ones that I'm kind of, you know, haven't gotten to yet. Because there are some decent, kind of sweet, spicy drunken noodles out there. But for the most point, this is a solid hit. And I do frequent this location a lot. Not only because, you know, it's not far from home, from the Cherry Creek area, but it is convenient. And it's just really a cool ambiance. It's cool cafe, and the food is great. So give it a try. Like I said, it's on 1350 South Colorado Boulevard. The restaurant that helped me, well, one of the restaurants that helped me survive the COVID. Yeah, it's so tasty. Now I'm hungry. Is it time for lunch yet? Time for coffee. Cup is empty. So that means this podcast is just about done. If you are interested in sponsoring us, the podcast, in any of the segments that we do, like My Shakedown or the restaurants that helped me survive the COVID, please contact us. There are opportunities to sponsor us in other platforms as well. We are on all platforms, iHeartRadio, Apple, Amazon, Spotify. I don't think there's a platform that we're not on. There's actually some platforms that I'm on that I didn't even know when I was looking at stuff on my supplier. So it's cool. It's great. Everyone's listening to us. If you want to sponsor us, please do. If you like, share us. Please spread the word. Get the news out there, because, you know, this is more than a podcast. It is a way of life. And yeah, that wraps it up for this week. Next week, I don't know what the shakedown is going to be. I don't know who will be highlighted on the restaurants that helped me survive. Yeah, so there's a lot in the air, and Lord knows what other kind of chaos is going to break out between now and then. So in the meantime, run fast, laugh hard, and always be kind.